Make their fire.
If the last hut she'd seen were any closer, Nona might just have followed Keot's advice. Instead, she crouched and wondered what the others were doing back at Sweet Mercy. They would have eaten by now, stuffed themselves with stew and bread. In Grey Dormitory, Ara, Ruli, and Eula might still be wondering about her. In Mystic Dormitory, Darla would be stomping around, and Zol would be sitting silently as if nothing had changed. And Joelle would be in her corner surrounded by her friends, laughing and joking about how she got that stupid peasant run off the rock. Anger flooded through Nona, sudden and unexpected in its ferocity, a red tide rising. I think I will have a fire. Nona narrowed her eyes in a stare that looked past the world. The path blazed before her as broad and clear as she had ever seen it, and before her heart took another beat, she threw herself at it. She struck the path and ran its course as she had run once before when Taxis soldiers had her trapped in a cave. The shock of the first contact rang through her as if she were steel, and on every side the glowing skeletons of trees lit within her mind. The entire forest caught in a flash, every twig and bough and branch, every angle, every tight wrapped leaf. Before she knew it, she had taken half a dozen strides, and Keot howled across her back as if he were set upon the coals of a fire. The sudden fear of what might come after sent Nona stumbling from the path. "You must own what you take," Sister Pan always said, and Nona had taken far more than she needed to light a fire, far more than she had ever taken save for that one day in the shadow of the Devil's Spine when she painted the rocks red. Nona found herself sprawled upon the forest floor, the cold mud bubbling beneath her outstretched hands, her skin bleeding light and every bone in her body vibrating as if it desired nothing more than to shake free of the flesh restraining it. She thought of heat rather than strength, the same way they warmed the training room at the Path Tower, pushing the energy into the form she needed.
Ah!
Too small a sound for too large an amount of pain. Nona felt a heartbeat away from rupture, from having her insides very quickly become her outsides. In a sudden, ugly gesture that Sister Pan would have roundly scolded her for, she wrenched the path-given power from herself, ejecting it towards the nearest tree, a large screw pine. Something bright passed between them. The tree shuddered, a ripple ran along its length, shredding bark, and then in one moment of heat and light the forest giant exploded. The blast knocked Nona flat, despite the shield of residual power around her. She might have lain there for a heartbeat, or 5 minutes. Time passed strangely, and she couldn't tell. Keot was howling, but her ears rang, and even though she didn't need them to hear him, his words passed through without her comprehension. When Nona raised her head, nothing remained of the tree, and none of those closest were anything more than blackened trunks studded with the shattered stumps of branches. Further back, in the area into which Nona had been thrown, the forest burned in dozens of spots, where blazing fragments had peppered both branches and undergrowth.
"Don't,"
Keot sounded as if he were wheezing.
"Do that again, ever."
Nothing of Nona's bivouac appeared to have survived. She glanced around for her chicken.
"What are you going to do now?"
Keot demanded. Nona spotted the bird's carcass, hanging in a tangle of briar, feathers smoldering. She narrowed her eyes. "Pluck it." Chapter 21. Nona rose with the light and left her shelter licking chicken grease from her fingers. She had made a breakfast of the remains, taking the last of the meat from the bones. The corridor wind fought its way through the trees, and on the boughs of frost oak and elm leaves started to unfurl, eager to snatch up what the red sun had to offer. The forest stank of char. In some places the wind had carried the fire a score of yards before the damp finally defeated it. Nona rubbed the cold from her bones and stretched her stiff back. In time she came to a woodsman's trail, and followed it, bound east.
So you're still running away?
I'm going home. Nona didn't know it until she said the words, but at some point in the restless night, her subconscious must have decided the issue for her and had set to waiting for her lips to part to let her know. Back to the village, where I grew up.
You're not grown up yet.
Where I lived until I came to the convent, Nona strode on, unruffled by Keogh now that she had a purpose once more. Before she had walked far enough even to lose sight of the forest, Nona's thoughts returned to the fire she had made. Walking the path had not come so easily to her since the day she killed Raymel Taxus, and Keot came to live beneath her skin. Not since Sweet Mercy held the shipheart. She could have put it down to the depth of the anger that propelled her onto the path this time. But there was more to it. She felt it in her bones. Immediately before Nona walked the path back in the cave where Raymel's men had them trapped, she had been with Hesse, drawn along the bond threaded between them. And Hesse had been in the undercaves back at the convent, just yards from the shipheart. Somehow, Nona had shared in that proximity, and her quantal skills had been boosted by the stone's power. And now, once again, since she'd taken up her shadow's thread from the undercaves, Nona felt that connection to the shipheart's power. Just a trickle of it, but enough so that left untapped the potential would build and could be spent to magnify whatever strength lay in her blood. Nona mused on the connection as she trudged between the cart ruts on the narrow lane she had found. Somewhere out there the shipheart rested. Wherever Yisht, or more likely Shirzal, had placed it. To the east, she felt, not the west. And somewhere close by her shadow waited, trapped in some way, for unattended shadows are apt to wander. It took days for the land to grow familiar, days travelling by back roads, crossing fields and patches of woodland, but always she kept her back to Verity, to the rock, and to the Tower of Inquiry. Whether there might be a search for her and how large it might be, Nona had no real idea, but she imagined they would likely be satisfied with simply having her gone, no longer polluting the faith or antagonizing the daughters of the Sis. She told herself that being forced to leave the convent now for breaking some silly rule was far preferable to being exposed as devil-tainted a year or two later, shamed in front of her friends, with all hands turned against her. She told herself it was a good thing, and tried to believe it as she walked the lonely tracks that would take her back to the village where her story began. A dozen times every mile, thoughts of the convent would slip into Nona's mind. What lessons the others might be taking now, what the nuns would say about her, how her friends would remember her when they came in sweaty and tired from the sands of Blade Hall. Each time the invaders came, she drove them out with thoughts of the here and now, of the muddy ruts before her, the rustling hedges, the quick wheat springing up even before the last ice drift had fully melted. She watched the lone farmhouses, poor things huddled on slopes or in front of the tree lines, as if expecting disaster at any moment. Twice she came to towns and skirted them. The traffic Nona met consisted mainly of tinkers and farmers, the former carrying their skills in their hands and on their backs, the tools of their trade, the latter bearing the produce of their fields, be it on four legs along behind or stacked as bales on a cart. Few of them passed a word with her, and most of those few words were warnings. Warnings of Dernish fleets, their sickwood barges packed so tight in the Marne that a man might walk across the sea from the southern ice to the northern without ever getting a foot wet. Warnings of the heretic hordes of the Skithrol gathering behind their borders, whipped to a frenzy by their battle queen. Nona nodded her thanks each time, but robbers on the road and lack of food seemed more pressing concerns than distant armies. She walked for half a day with an old woman who went from town to town sharpening edges. On knives, on plowshares, on scythes, even on swords if such a thing were hung rusting above the elderman's hearth. The woman, Galabeth, hardly reached Nona's shoulder, bent with age, all bones and uncomfortable angles. It took her 3 miles before she noticed Nona's eyes.
"Sister's truth! Ain't you got no eyes, sister?"
Nona suppressed a laugh. "They're not holes. They're just black. It was an illness. And I'm not a sister. Not even a novice." Galabeth made the sign of the tree.
"Thought you'd the devil in you."
Nona opened her mouth, then closed it. Galabeth shuffled another 10 yards before ceasing to suck at her few remaining teeth and offering another opinion.
"It's good you're a nun, child."
Another shuffled yard.
"Don't have to worry about a husband."
Nona had forgotten the uncompromising honesty of the ancient. Sister Pan had a touch of it, but perhaps she still retained too many of her wits to let her tongue wander into unintentioned cruelty. But Galabeth was right. Joelle and her friends had delighted in telling Nona how ugly her eyes made her, how no boy would ever want to gaze into them. The old woman knew it too. "I'm not a nun." Nona made a mental note to cover up the sign of the ancestor's tree seared across the back of the coat she wore, branches spreading above, taproot reaching for the source below. "Not even a novice." Galabeth waved the denial aside as if a convent range coat and a glimpse of habit were impervious to dispute.
"Husbands are overrated. I had one once. Ah, yes. I was a pretty thing. Long brown hair. Good legs."
She slapped them for emphasis.
"Was married for 20 years, till the flu took him. He was still a young man, not far past 40. Didn't give me any children, mind, or leave me much. Just a cottage too busy falling down to be much use. And this?"
She rummaged in her skirts and produced a dull grey object, like a river stone, dark and specked with glints of crystal perhaps, longer than it was wide. "What is it?"
"What is it? Best whetstone in the empire is what it is."
Galabeth returned the object to its place.
"My John didn't leave me much, but this,"
she patted her hip,
"was how he made his living, and how an old woman like me is still welcomed up and down the corridor. His grandfather found it under the ice, harder than nails. Can put an edge on a diamond, he said, though he ain't seen one of them." "Kill her and take it,"
Keot flowed towards the hand nearest Galabeth.
"Why, what is it?"
Nona flexed the hand and kept Keot from passing her wrist.
"Something old, a piece of the missing."
"A piece of them?"
"Arc bone, not ship bone, something older, familiar. I can taste it."
"A useful thing to have," Nona said.
"Keeps me fed long as I can move my legs,"
Galabeth nodded.
"And when I can't walk the roads, I'll up and sell it to some youngster in Verity. Then I'll see how long I can buy a place by a warm hearth. I won't need long."
A grin.
"My John always wanted a child so they could carry both his name and the stone. A son or a daughter to have it and walk the corridor. Keeping it sharp, he called it. Keeping us all sharp."
Nona nodded. "If it's ship bone or arc bone, then it's not from the missing."
"You don't know anything. You're too young to remember last year."
Keot made a rush for her hand. Nona held him back. "And unless you start making sense, I have to assume you're too old to remember yesterday." Keot sulked after that, only twisting her last farewell into a snarl, when Nona finally managed to leave Galabeth behind at a farm that needed her services, or at least needed her stone. Nona didn't pursue the matter. She knew from experience that more than 2 questions in a row just set the devil talking nonsense. She'd come to think of him as a broken thing, part of a mind perhaps, filled with fragments of knowledge, occasionally useful as the shards of a pot can be, offering a sharp edge, but no good for holding soup. known as Recollection of the Wider Grey, past the Relum Forest to the west of the village, and the Bone Mire to the east, was, like Kiot's memory, a fractured thing. Giljon had taken them back and forth across the Grey and out beyond, chasing rumor when rumor showed its tail, then returning to some long-established if tortuous circuit when the well of gossip ran dry. What remained with Nona were slices. A town skirted here, a hillside there, a ruin, a lake. Eventually, following directions from another village almost as small as hers, though bearing a name, Nona found her way to the Relum Forest. The old man who had known of the forest apparently by its ill repute also knew of her village, and miraculously had a name for it too.
Relum Village, aye. Ain't heard of that place for years, though.
He gave Nona a peculiar look, as if she might be testing him. But then everyone Nona met gave her odd looks. Your eyes might occupy only a tiny fraction of what you present to the world, but they are what each stranger seeks when they meet you, as if needing reassurance concerning the person that watches through them. When you present two wells of darkness to the world makes the sign of the ancestor's tree, or points a finger up across their heart to the hope hidden above cloud-scattered skies, or makes the horns to summon the protection of the small gods who watch from between moments and under shadows. Nona found that the unfamiliar track she had been directed along turned into a familiar one, and led her through the arboreal gloom of the Relum Forest, where once she had run in the red mist of a focus moon. That time she had been chasing Amondo, her first friend, and also a man who had betrayed her before they had even met. She paced the track with the woods whispering on both sides, remembering the juggler, the quick magic of his hands, and the strangeness he had brought with him into her life. A splash of color, proof of a world beyond the boundaries of the grey. Nona had once told the girls at the convent a lie. On the first day she met them, she had claimed that the bloodshed that saw her given to the child-taker was wrought by a wood god upon the Pilarthi who captured her. There had been no Pilarthi. Nona had never seen a Pilarthi mercenary, only heard of them in Nana Even's tales. There had been no wood god either, though she had seen one of those, a year before, watching her from the realm, his face almost like those twisted into the bark of trees. Almost. The shadows on the forest path lengthened while the distance to open ground shortened. Nona fought to keep her pace from quickening. Around her the wood grumbled at the wind, creaking, groaning, always in motion. Nona felt eyes watching her and wondered whose they might be. A wood god, perhaps, ragged, leaf-clad, crouched in the boughs of an oak. Or perhaps just an owl, shaking off sleep. Somewhere along this path, she had murdered half a dozen soldiers. The troop Shirzal had sent with her Quantal threadworker, to guard him, as he sifted through the world's threads in search of bodies in which more than one blood ran. The men who had hired Amondo to coax her from the village. How much had they paid? How much had it been worth to them to keep their business quiet? If Amondo had proved too expensive, the soldiers would have just come in to take her. Their time was worth more to Shirzal than the lives of a few villagers. Ahead, with the shadows of the trees slanting across the trail like cage bars, the green arch opened, and the land lay exposed to the sky. Nona left the realm, still feeling the eyes upon her back, and followed the path up through the moor towards the fields and huts of her village.
"It's been too easy."
Kiot burned across the back of her neck and she lowered her hood to let the corridor wind cool him. "It wasn't easy." Though, as she said it, Nona realized that it had been. A walk through the Empire's garden lands and into the Grey.
"She said they meant to kill you. The Dark One said it."
Nona shrugged. Kettle was probably just trying to scare me into leaving more quickly and not coming back. They would certainly have whipped me and sent me from the rock. She frowned. Perhaps the Inquisitors might even have thrown her into the glass water to add her bones to the bottom. But why would they pursue her once she had gone? Only as she closed the last mile did Nona's thoughts wander to the kind of reception she might find waiting. In her head, the village had been an indivisible object, a ball of memories tight-bound, all or nothing. Now long-banished thoughts of her mother intruded for the first time in an age. Would she recognize her daughter? Would she be angry? Would she pull back from the blackness of her eyes, or open her arms with the mother's love that haunted Nona's most vague and distant recollections? Soft, encompassing, safe, and forgiving? You'll see it now. My village. Nona crested the low rise that the village knew as Hedodge Ridge. Her heart suddenly took to pounding as the land opened out before her. Her eyes tried to make sense of a scene that should have been familiar. At first it looked as if she had been mistaken, and the village must lie over the next rise. The houses were gone, but here a spar stood, black and alone. There a scattering of tumbled stones. And everywhere the ghosts of pathways covered now with grass and bushes, but clear enough if you knew where to look.
Turn around!
Keot's voice exploded into her skull. Nona found herself obeying without question, but sluggishly, as if her mind were an anchor her muscles had to drag, still mired in the scene before her. With Hunska speed, Nona's body wrenched itself through the degrees fighting inertia. Her head led the turn, and out of the corner of her eyes she saw the projectile's glimmer as it sped towards her back. Confused, shocked, Nona felt her grip on the moment slipping. She drove her flaw blades out from the fingers of the hand she was reaching over her shoulder. The missile held her focus, thin as a nail, long as a hand, flighted, spinning, some kind of disc around the shaft an inch back from the tip, as if the bolt had pierced a copper penny on its way through the air. Somewhere back behind it, a blurred figure stood in the roadway. Nona reached for her speed. Even if she got her fingers to the spike, she doubted she could slow it enough to stop it skewering her shoulder. It became a race. A yard left for the bolt, 10 inches for her fingertips to intercept its path. Only her hand and the bolt moved. No heartbeat, no breath, no sound, no chance. The bolt came too fast for her to grasp it. Instead, Nona turned the tip of the flaw blade extending from her index finger, presenting the flat and angled side of the invisible blade to the bolt. Deflected, the bolt carried on, its path slanting upwards. It tore into the material of her range coat a thumb's width above her skin, and came to a jolting halt there, stopped by the ridge set an inch behind the point. Nona's eyes adjusted, bringing the figure on the road into sharp focus as she completed her turn. He stood 20 yards back, having emerged from the thicket of dendron bushes that flanked the lane. A tall man, grey-haired, gaunt in his heavy coat, a crossbow raised and bolstered against his shoulder, one eye staring down its length at her. He didn't need to close the other. The socket gaped empty, divided by a scar that travelled to his cheek.
"Damn!" Giljon lowered his crossbow. "I always knew you'd be fast."
Chapter 22 Nona tugged Giljon's bolt from her range coat and glanced at it. The disc was to stop the shaft penetrating too deep, angled so as to allow it to fly straight through. She wondered what venom it had been smeared with. She looked back at the man.
"Not going to run?"
Giljon shrugged. He looked older than she remembered.
"I had one chance. It should have worked. Now I have none."
He frowned.
"How did you know?"
Nona's turned to shrug. "Magic." She hadn't heard of any magic that would give you eyes in the back of your neck, but Margil's had been known to manifest all manner of odd powers. She walked towards the child taker.
Kill him.
Are you going to kill me?
Giljon shared Kiot's interest. He looked resigned rather than worried. He made no attempt at a defense. The child taker knew enough about Hunskers to understand it would do him no good.
Well? Honestly?
Nona closed the gap between them.
I don't know.
She stabbed him with the bolt, punching it into the meat of his pectoral muscle as far as the collar would allow. She had to reach up. The man was still a head taller than her.
Oh!
Giljon slapped a hand to the puncture wound.
Not like that, you won't.
No? Giljon wobbled and sat down.
Groat and paste. Fast acting.
Where were you going to take me? Giljon waved an uncoordinated arm to the west, shook his head, and collapsed. He lay with eyes open, pupils dilated, watching nothing in particular. Nona knelt to check the child taker's breathing and pulse. It looked odd to see the man who had ruled over her, Hessa, and the others, lying there like that, hair in disarray, cheek to the cold ground. For so many miles his rule had been absolute as he sat, his back to the cage full of children, 4 foot plodding ahead of him. She relieved him of his pack and coin purse, then tied him hand and foot with the rope he had on him. That was foolish, she muttered, standing.
Yes, you should have cut him open.
I should have asked him my questions before testing his own venom on him. Well, she looked down at Giljon. If you weren't going to kill me, then you must have a horse nearby. Probably a cart, too. You weren't going to carry me over your shoulder. Nona hefted Giljon's pack, then shook his purse. It hung limp, with hardly a jingle of coins. She remembered it as ever full, Giljon emptying it with maddening sloth as he purchased a child here, a child there, for a scatter of copper pennies. Nona set off back along the path looking for any sign of tracks, just as Sister Tallow had taught her. But in the end she saw not so much as a single hoof print, and found both horse and cart by exercising common sense and checking in the places she would have hidden a cart if she had arrived ahead of a target she wished to waylay. Giljon had left his transport along the last of a dozen old charcoal burners' trails that led from the main track through Relum Forest. He had made no attempt to disguise it, just taken it far enough to be hidden from the track. She stopped as she sighted the mule, grey and unkempt, and behind it the cage in which she had travelled, huddled between Saida and Hessa, her friends, now dead. Nona untied the mule, pulling her hand away swiftly as it tried to bite her, and led it on, dragging the cart through the unwilling undergrowth. In time she found one of the charcoal burners' clearings, and turned the cart before returning to the track. Hefting Giljon into the cage nearly broke Nona's back. But she had gained a lot of muscle since they had parted company at the Kaltas, almost 6 years before, and the years had paired the child-taker closer to the bone. Nona pushed his feet through the gate and closed it on him, knotting the rope to hold it in place. The mule snorted once, then fell silent. She leaned back and stared at the ruins of the village with no thoughts, just the open fields around her, overgrown and turning wild, tugged by the damp wind. Above the grey sky racing eastward, far to the south the smokes of Morltown smudging the air. The idea that her old home no longer existed wouldn't seem to fit in her skull no matter how she turned it. She might not have liked the place, but it was her foundation, the roots of her. She straightened and walked down the slope towards the spot where her mother's house had stood. To call the remains of the village ruins was overgenerous. Traces would be more accurate. In another 5 years it would be hard to tell the site where the people had lived from the spaces where they had grown their crops. Grey Stephen's house was a pile of rubble, soon to be swallowed by the rising turf. The stone of James Baker's home still showed. The lintel beneath which his wife Martha used to scowl at the world lay half buried. Little more than a stain amid the nettles, marked where Nona's own home had stood. The wattle and daub walls had gone to nothing, and the thicker timbers lay in ashes and rot among the grass, falling apart at a nudge of her boot. It took another hour before Giljon cracked open an eye. The Grey Sisters brewed groton venom from the gallbladder of a rare fish that seldom emerged from beneath the ice. It wouldn't have been cheap, or easy to obtain. As well as a rapid descent into unconsciousness, the victim could look forward to a period of disorientation, followed by days in which concentration would prove impossible. The sisters used it if they needed to capture a Quantle or Marjol. No drug would safely render a victim unconscious for a week, but a dose of Groton could deny an academic the use of most of their magics for nearly that long, or keep a Quantle from the path. "Where's my mother?"
"I don't know."
Giljon blinked, spat, and tried to sit up. "What happened here?" Nona waved an arm at the place where the village had stood. Giljon was too occupied with the rope around his wrists to reply, staring at it in fascination, as if it might be made of gold and braided with gemstones. Nona repeated the question, and he spat again, as if the venom had left his mouth sour, and laughed.
"You happened, child."
"Me?"
"She probably would have done it just for the soldiers."
"Soldiers?"
"You killed 5 of Shazal's household guard."
Nona said nothing. The hunters had brought her back to the village wearing blood, almost enough to drown in.
"It was Onastus Hadmar that she did this for, though."
"Who?" Giljon looked vague, as if forgetting where he was. "Onastus who?" He shook his head.
"Hadmar! Up in that convent of yours, you forget how rare any sign of the tribes is. Quantle's the hardest of all to find. Not 1 in 1,000, girl. Onastus was a prime, wearing Shazal's scarlet and silver. You cut him up like meat. Shazal's guard must have destroyed this place while we were on the road. That's all I know. It's the first time I've been back. I got here last night."
"So why didn't they come after me? Catch us on the road?" Nona's fists tightened at the thought, nails biting palm. "Let them come now."
"I'm sure they..."
Giljon rolled over, trying to free his hands.
"I'm in my own damn cage!"
Nona banged the bars. "Why didn't they chase us?"
"Damn!"
Giljon hit his head against the cart deck. "It's good stuff, this Groton. Feels like I'm swimming through the world." Nona banged again.
"They did chase us. I'm sure they did. But Shazal got wind of a better prospect. Something Onastus had pointed her at, I'll bet. And she set all her guard on that instead."
"Zol." That was Nona's guess. The chosen one, saving her life before they'd even met. "Who sent you? And how did you find me?"
"A number sent me."
Nona shook her head. The Groton had his tongue.
100 sent me. 100 golden sovereigns."
"They posted a reward?" The size of it staggered her. Giljon had filled his cage for less than 1 sovereign.
"Too big a number for me to ignore, girl. Old Giljon's fallen on hard times. Yes, he has. You and your little friends were the richest lot I ever hauled. Never found another like it."
He rolled to his back, staring at the sky with a single eye.
"And who better to hunt you? I knew where you came from. Knew you'd go back. The runners always do. Spent my last coin on something to keep you quiet. Came here, waited. Thought my best chance would be when you saw what had happened. That moment of shock. Thought I'd be enough. 1 shot, 1 captive, 100 divided by 1. I gambled. I lost. Kill him.
Nona frowned. Giljon had rolled to her side of the cart and had the bars in his hands.
Where am I?
Confusion in his voice, the drug taking hold again.
I'm in my own cage.
We all are, Nona said.
If you let me go, I won't say that I saw you.
Giljon met her eyes. His clarity seemed to come and go in waves. You will if there's money in it, Nona said. A sadness rose through her. The village and the child-taker weren't things she had placed value in, or even liked. But they were her things, part of her own story. And you couldn't choose those, not when you were a child. Now, they both lay, ruined, each in their own way. Something had gone out of Giljon. Perhaps it had left the day the High Priest humbled him and beat 4 foot to death. Perhaps it had left a little each year, starting before he came into her life. Maybe it had begun the day the Skithrol took his eye. Giljon clutched the bars and stared at her, less than a yard separating them now.
Kill him. Even you should be able to see this one needs killing. He'll betray you without a thought. He was going to give you to your enemies.
You're right. Nona focused, and 4 flaw blades shimmered momentarily as they sprung from her fingers. You would have seen me killed, child taker, just to put coin in your pocket. With a snarl, Nona lashed out. The bars before Giljon's face fell away in sections. You won't hunt for me again. The child-taker made no reply, only watched her, as the blood dripped from a cut across the tip of his nose. Nona bent and scooped up one of the sections of bar, a wooden disc, narrower than her finger, and about 2 inches across. She took the child-taker's purse from her pocket and put the disc in, as if it were an oversized coin. Yours, she tossed the purse into the cage. With that, she walked away.
You're just leaving him?
Yes.
He would have sold you again.
Yes.
You're insane.
Maybe, Nona shrugged. I do hear voices in my head.
Chapter 23 Abbess Glass. The girl's safe. Even in the study of her own house, Glass would no longer name her. They called the rank below Inquisitor, Watchers. But in truth, they were more often listeners, and they were good at it.
Safe's too strong a word for it, Sister Apple said.
But she's gone. My friend assures me that the girl left the rock in one piece. Behind Sister Apple, Sister Tallow said nothing, but her shoulders relaxed a fraction. To Glass, the fraction spoke volumes. Glass nodded. Kettle would report to Apple from now on, and Apple would bring word to the big house. Nona would have the sense to run, though her instincts would tell her to fight. Kettle would have made sure the girl ran. Of course, she would run back to whatever collection of muddy sticks the child-taker had purchased her from. You didn't need to see much to see that. Even Pelter would guess as much. It would take the Inquisition a while to find the child-taker, though. Too long, probably. And without him, they'd never discover the village. Sister Tallow coughed, bringing Glass back to the moment.
Abbess, you need to take action. Brother Pelter won't leave here until he's brought you down. If he can't find anything concrete, he'll make his case out of innuendo and gossip. It won't matter.
I am taking action, sister. Glass stayed at her window. I'm watching the Watchers. She smiled at the old joke. I can see 2 of them from here. One is following Sister Chrysanthemum in the direction of the necessary. I fear he may be disappointed if he hopes for any secrets to be dropped.
I mean action, The High Priest.
The High Priest is struggling to hold on to the church, Glass said. The ice is closing. The Emperor feels it. In such times, trust is squeezed out and we gather power to ourselves. It would take no great leap of imagination for Crucicle to take Nevis's mantle and declare himself High Priest as well as Emperor. Nevis would rather lose Sweet Mercy than lose it all. He'd lose a dozen convents and monasteries and count himself ahead.
Direct action, then.
Sister Apple tucked a red coil into her headdress, thoughtful, as if choosing the right weapon for the job.
Pelter's just one man. We could...
Glass shook her head. We must have faith, Apple.
I pray to the ancestor at the four corners of every day.
Faith in me. A smile. Glass turned from her window and put a hand to Apple's shoulder, deepening her voice theatrically.
Grey sister, you may pass unseen and drop poison in a cup, but my intentions are hidden deeper than any shadow goes. I can place my venom in any ear where words may echo.
She reached for Tallow's shoulder and brought both nuns to her side.
Red sister, you might punch through a door, but when my blows are struck, no castle wall will stop them. No miles will keep you safe.
Glass spoke with a confidence she didn't feel, but she needed them strong. In any game of bets and forfeit, the bluff was always of more importance than whatever might be written on the cards held tight against your chest.
We have faith in you, Abbess,
Tallow said. Tallow always had faith.
Be cautious, though.
Apple still looked worried.
Spend too long watching the long game, and the short game will kill you.
Days passed. The ice wind broke. The fields shaded from white to green. It had been the best part of a week since Nona had run. Abbess Glass watched from her study window as she did every day. Her gaze settled on Novice Zol standing in the shadows by the base of the Dome of the Ancestor.
Come on, girl, what are you waiting for?
Glass spoke to an empty room. Zol should have made her move by now. Glass shook her head. She seemed to do more watching than Pelter's watchers these days. It had been her first post in the Inquisition as a young woman. Shella Yamel, Watcher. At first, she had been tasked just to bring tales to the tower, whatever snippets of information passed across and around her father's market stall. But Brother Devis, her handler, had seen the talent she had for the work and had made her a watcher, an official appointment recorded in the great books. Zol stepped from the shadow now, intent on something. Glass followed her gaze. Brother Pelter, Sister Rael, and Novice Joelli. A holy trinity. The three emerged from Academia Tower, heads bowed in conversation. Three sharp knocks on the door behind her, and Sister Apple came pushing through before the cum was fully past Glass's lips.
Mistress Shade?
Glass raised her eyebrows. Apple looked as if she had run all the way from the undercaves, hectic red blotches across both cheekbones.
Kettle's gone!
Apple drew in a breath.
Something happened to Nona. Something bad.
She went after Shazal.
What? No, I told you. She's gone after Nona.
I was asking if Nona had gone after Shazal.
Glass glanced back out of the window. Everything still looked calm. It wouldn't last. Apple blinked.
Nona? Why would she? And how could she imagine she could do anything to Shazal?
Glass drew a slow breath, willing her impatience away. She couldn't expect Apple to think clearly where Kettle was concerned.
What kind of trouble was Nona in?
Apple shook her head. Kettle left a ciphered note, no details. She knew I wouldn't let her go alone. Kettle is a grey.
She doesn't require your permission, sister.
Glass smiled. Besides, that girl is death on two legs. Worry for whoever gets in her way. Apple looked down, frowning. Additionally, Glass said, it's probably safer for her out there. Sister Rock reports Inquisition guards and seekers approaching the Vinery Stair.
Guards? Apple met Glass's gaze, her frown deepening. The seekers would be to hunt out Kettle. Rumor had it she still haunted the convent, and rumor was bread and butter to the Inquisition. But the guards, that one clearly puzzled Apple. Why did the Inquisition need its shock troops for sweet mercy?
Think it through, dear. Glass pulled out her chair and sat at her desk. There were papers that would need signing. She paused, arm extended for her quill. Apple's intelligence had never been in doubt, but the woman applied it too narrowly. Imagine Pelter is making one of those poisons of yours. He selects his ingredients. He assembles them. He adds them in the required order and in the required amounts. Not all at once. Some watchers first. Let things simmer. Some more. Stir. Wait. Then the next.
But what's he brewing?
Apple's fingers moved as if imagining mixing ingredients of her own. I told you, Glass said. Poison. Chapter 24. It took less than 2 hours to reach White Lake. Back in the days when her mother first left to go there, Nona had always imagined it as distant a place as the moon.
It's too far, her mother would say when Nona wanted to go. Much too far.
In the end, though, she had taken her curious child to a handful of meetings at the Hope Church, and likely Nona would have been confirmed in the light soon enough. But the juggler came, and everything changed. For each mile Nona walked, her mind raced 1,000 back and forth over the same questions, the same hopes and fears. The people would have run from the village. Soldiers would have fired the buildings, but it would mean more if people ran to spread the news. To lift a hand against those in the scarlet and silver meant your home would burn. Her mother would have run, and she would have run this way, towards White Lake. During all the days that Nona had travelled to reach the village, her mind had refused questions about her mother. The old hurt had scabbed over, been sealed beneath scar tissue, and Nona refused to pick at it, not until it was time. But now there might not ever be time, and Nona's questions queued for their turn on her tongue. Accusations, too. But behind all that lay the oldest memories of safe arms, warmth, love without condition. Memories that Nona treasured, however indistinct they were. A taste of something that she still sought. The trail thickened into a track, the track into a road, and she came around the margins of the White Lake, watching the town on the far shore grow closer with each stride. Perhaps 200 homes hugged the water, scores more stepping up the slopes behind. Keys reached out, questing fingers probing the lake's secrets. A score of boats lay tied, half a dozen more heading in from the day's fishing. Here and there a light burned in a window, the first of many that would rise as the night fell. Nona spotted the Hope Church on the outskirts of town, a stone-built structure that should have carried a peaked roof, but instead stood open to the sky. As she drew closer, she spotted rooms adjoining the back, sheltering under tiles and timber. Presumably, Preacher Mickle liked to sleep in a dry bed. The light had all but failed by the time Nona came to the church doors. They stood twice her height and were supported by scrolling iron hinges. It had always seemed odd to have doors on a place with no roof. Nona listened, but heard nothing save distant cries from the keys and laughter on the road, perhaps at the sight of a novice of the ancestor knocking on the doors of hope. She dismissed the thought. Few in White Lake would recognize her range coat as part of the order, and surely not from the road. She had smeared dirt over the sign of the tree, scorched into the leather across her back, and it would take close inspection to see it for what it was. She knocked. Nothing. Above her the sky was almost dark, ribbed by the red edges of clouds. Nona climbed the wall, using her blades only twice where the stonework offered no hold. She straddled the top and looked down into the church. A slate-flagged floor supported an altar stone at the center. Otherwise, the place lay bare. At the services Nona had attended, the altar had sported a strange globe of brass bands, something to do with pointing to the hope when the skies were veiled. She eyed the door at the back. Must be where he lives. Kiot made no reply. He had kept silent since Nona spared Giljon. Disgusted, she presumed. She felt him moving from time to time, sliding across her skin, but going no deeper. Nona hung off the wall and dropped down into the church. The memory of incense haunted the place despite the wind moaning in through window slits. She straightened and approached the rear door. Before she reached it, Preacher Mickle bustled out, carrying in both arms the brass device Nona remembered. He kicked the door shut on the warmth and light behind him, and crossed half the distance to Nona before registering her presence and startling to a halt. The bands of the globe slipped from his fingers. On instinct, Nona leapt forward and caught the device before it could hit the floor. She straightened and held it out to him. It was heavier than she thought it would be, given it was mostly air enclosed by just half a dozen strips of metal bent into interlocking hoops. The preacher took his globe, his mouth working but no words emerging. Shock had replaced the fierceness Nona remembered. Mickle stood an inch or two taller than her. He was perhaps 30 years of age now, his dark hair still thick but receding in a widow's peak. "I'm looking for Myra, from Relham Village." It felt odd to give both her mother and the village a name. "She worshipped here."
"Who are you?"
The preacher backed away to put the altar stone between them.
"A demon!"
He set the heavy globe before him. Nona puzzled for a moment, then raised her fingers to her face.
"No, just a normal person. A poison made my eyes dark." "Do you know if Myra Gray survived?"
"What happened?"
"At the village."
"Sometimes she goes by Myra Reed."
The preacher narrowed dark eyes at her.
"You didn't move like a normal person. Hunske, are you? How did you get in?"
"I climbed."
The preacher snorted his disbelief and opened his mouth before glancing around. Perhaps lacking any more believable explanation, he stopped short of calling her a liar.
"You're looking for a woman?"
"Myra, from Relham."
"Relham?"
The fear in his eyes when he had thought her a demon had now entirely made way for suspicion.
"What interest would this Myra be to you?"
"That's my business."
If he didn't recognize her, then Nona had no desire to identify herself. The preacher touched the amulet hanging from his chain, a flat ring of grey metal set with runes.
"If this Myra worships here, then she's my business. The Hope's business. What right do you have to ask questions here?"
Nona's temper lashed her tongue.
"Right of blood! She's my mother!"
Subterfuge had always been a faint hope, marked as she was, and having shown her speed.
"Ha!"
Preacher Mickle drew himself to his full height.
"Now the truth comes out. Don't think I didn't know you, Nona Reed, standing there in your nun's coat with talk of blood rites on your lips. The ancestor worshippers have schooled you well."
A sneer now, as if remembering the child reduced the warrior before him.
"When we humble ourselves before the Hope, We join a greater family than any founded on seed and grunting in the dark.
The ancestor worshippers taught me that the hope is just a star like any other, only younger and still burning white. It's not coming to Abbath. It won't save us from the ice.
Nona flexed her fingers before her.
And they taught me how to beat a grown man to death with my bare hands if I need to. So I'll ask again. Where's my mother? She has given up her spirit to the hope.
He said it with such poorly disguised satisfaction that Nona had to fight not to follow through with her threat. Had Keote seized his chance, he might have tipped her into violence.
She's dead?
Realization hit home, and Nona's anger blew out, leaving her hollow. The preacher's eyes flickered towards the door to his chambers.
You should go, nun.
She's in there.
You got my mother in there.
The conviction seized her, the truth suddenly obvious, denial easy. Her mother couldn't be dead. There was still too much unsaid between them. They could speak now, as adults, not separated by that gulf between a child's ignorance and a grown-up's sorrows. She started towards the door.
What? No, of course not.
Nona was through the door before Mickle started after her.
Wait, that's forbidden.
A corridor ran for 20 yards, 3 doors to the left, 2 to the right, and 1 at the far end. Nona glanced around, took the lantern from the wall, then ran for the second door on the left, which was heavier than the rest, and bound with iron straps.
She's not in there, don't be stupid.
Mickle came flapping through the church door after her. He sounded as though he were hiding something. Nona reached for her serenity so that she could pull the lock's thread, but waves of emotion pushed her back. A turbulence she couldn't still. With the preacher closing on her, she punched a flaw blade into the heavy lock, once, twice, 3 times, then turned it. The ruined mechanism surrendered with a squeal, and shrugging off Mickle's grasping fingers, she pushed through. The room beyond was a small one. Windowless, with a broad shelf set at waist height running around 3 walls. An image of the hope returned the lantern light, sparkling in 1,000 pieces of glass, mirror, and crystal. Scores of objects covered the shelf, arranged with reverence rather than scattered.
I thought...
Nona let the preacher wrestle her back into the corridor. Her mother was dead. Her denial had been stupid.
I'm sorry.
Sorry?
Mickle shoved her back against the wall.
You've defiled the hope sanctum and broken my door.
Images of Nona's mother filled her mind. The hurt was worse than a wire whip. She needed something, anything to drive the memories out. Questions might help.
What is all that stuff?
Nona tried to see past the preacher's shoulder.
Pieces of the old world.
Keote broke his silence.
Treasures.
The preacher tried to push her down the corridor towards the rear exit.
I saw Blackskin.
Red sisters made their armor from Blackskin. The oily sheen of the stuff was unmistakable. Even the scrap among Mickle's treasures would be worth more than the building.
And?
Nona didn't have names for the rest of the things. But some of them had the same grey, glinting quality of old Galabeth's precious whetstone.
Ark bone.
The preacher had her by the hood of her range coat, pulling her to the back door. He lifted the bar and kicked it open.
They are parts of the ships that carried our tribes here across the Black Sea between the stars, and parts of the works they built here. When the hope comes... He will make them whole again just as he will bind flesh to bone and raise the dead from their graves to live once more.
He pushed Nona out into the blustery night. She put her foot against the door as he tried to haul it closed.
Where does it come from?
It's the gift of the hope,
Mikkel tugged the door again. Nona held